Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytane and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
You're listening to QualityCast North. Regular listeners of this podcast will be familiar with British Columbia's Physician Quality Improvement Program, the initiative that provides and funds the physician quality improvement training and the quality improvement projects we showcase on this podcast. This initiative rolled out across the province in 2017, but how is it doing so far? To provide us with a pulse check on the program is our special guest today, Dr. Kurt Smatcher. Kurt is a retired anaesthetist and a founding father of PQI in British Columbia, and with whom its journey first started. Welcome, Kurt. So glad you could join us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, this is great, especially with your whirlwind travel this week with you and Shira both just coming back from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, their annual conference. So what a great way to ping off this podcast this morning. Kurt, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your career, and your journey into medicine? And then after you talk about that a little bit, we're gonna find out about your interest, how that started in quality improvement.
Yeah, over my life, I've had a little bit of trouble holding a steady job. I started out in marine biology. I have a master's in marine biology, did a little bit of work up in the Beaufort, a little bit of museum work. But there weren't any jobs around. So I went into computer science, got a master's in computer science. I've got enough paper to open an outhouse. The computer science stuff, I was about 14 years in high tech, operations research, data center management for both Cominco and BCTEL R&D division. And with that, I started playing around with being a paramedic. And I was a paramedic for 12 or 14 years as well. I had way too much fun with that. And so I made the switch, not into paramedicine, but into medicine. So my first day in medicine, I was 38. I think the youngest in the class was 18. So, you know, about half, well, closer in age to my kids than to me. So I was the mature voice in the room sometimes. And so I went through medicine, anesthesiology, and ended up as an anesthesiologist. But as I said, my attention span's short. So I ended up being chief of staff over on the west coast of the island, both for the facility, West Coast General, but also for primary care. Did a lot of work with the community, trying to maintain services there. When everyone was losing GPs, we had problems losing internists. And we just worked with the community to maintain services. And at the same time, one of the reasons I went there was because of my marine biology background. I love scuba diving. So I opened a scuba shop and I taught and did tropical tours, which was a lot of fun. And had a big dive boat. I just generally enjoy life.
It sounds like it. What great examples of that balance and bringing joy in. Around the quality improvement piece, what initially, you know, you talk about having interest in a lot of different fields and areas. What was it that drew you into the quality improvement arena initially way back when?
You know, it's always been a philosophy that if you're going to do it, you may as well do it right. So my first introduction to QI was back in about 1980. I was working for Cominco, doing operations research, doing I think I set up their first help desk, and we just trying to serve our community and provide this quality service. So back in 80, that's the time that Deming first hit North America. Also the time that Crosby and a lot of the early authors were around. And when I go to my bookshelf, I've got an early edition of some of these books. My first book, I think, was Crosby on Japanese Management, which is what Lean was called at the time. And it's always been part of what I did in industry, and part of, you know, basically how I approach problems. But it wasn't until about 2013-ish that I got formally involved with QI in medicine. And I took a look around, and there were a couple of options available to me. One was the Quality Academy here in BC, and I very seriously considered that. And the other was going to IHI and training there. Difference was more international, more, you know, the giants in the field. And so you can tell from the way I'm leading up to this, that's the one I chose. I went to Boston. I think that whole episode probably cost me about $50,000 out of my own pocket to get that training. And then I taught for them for 2 years just to really consolidate. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll take the material, learn the material, but I use the teaching as a way to make sure that material is solid. And so I did that with IHI in Boston, brought the material back here, and PQI is pretty much the result of that.
So Kurt, you were quite possibly the first to develop the quality improvement education program specifically for physicians in British Columbia. And I'd like to ask you, what initially prompted you to do this? And how did you actually go about setting it up? Because a brand new program province-wide like this is not a small undertaking by anyone's reckoning. And what was the program's original goal?
Yeah, so the story around that was centers a lot around a cardiologist here, Jan Kornder, who within Fraser was the MD for quality. And about February 2014, Jan pitched at a meeting the need for a physician compact. And I told him there was no way. The physician compact is a very two-sided agreement. And I had no doubt that they would hold us to our side of the agreement, and we had no way to hold them to their side. So with that one-sidedness, there's no way that I would ever support that. This was all in aid, though, of physician engagement. And I said, Dan, if you want physician engagement, you do it through quality. And I gave him a copy of the IHI white paper on physician engagement and said, there you are. That's how you do it. So that was 2014. And that's when the 2014 PMA came into play. And it had money for physician engagement and some other work that was a little less defined. And so Doctors of BC did a bit of a roadshow where they went to each of the health authorities and they tried to pitch this and can you put it all together? And so Jan tapped me on the shoulder and basically said, shut up or put up. And I ended up chairing that committee. The committee was about 10 people and we churned out some of the ideas. We thought about it. We put together a proposal. So that gave us the go ahead. That was May 2014. It took me about a year to get things sorted out because this is brand new. There's nothing like it. Well, there's nothing really like it in the world, but certainly not in BC. And so there's a lot of meetings with Nigel Murray, who was the CEO at Fraser at the time, and with Andy Webb, who was VP Med. They were both supportive, but the problem we've had over the years is that support is more of a tolerance than a, you know, grab onto us and run with us. So we were good to, we were good to go, but we'll see what happens, right? That was kind of the idea. So we did a lot of work there. And then, if you remember that time, the freezer ran into some problems, and Nigel was basically removed from his position. Andy was seconded to the ministry, and so we were kind of leaderless in a lot of ways. We had everyone in administration had their heads down, and they were not going to stick them up, which gave us complete control over our destiny. And for as difficult as that was for the organization, it was great for us. And so we got to make the organization pretty much unfettered. And we had the VP of IT at the time took over the role of sponsor for us, and he was wonderful. And it's one of the reasons that our access to data, I think, was so good. And he got it. He knew what we were trying to do, and he was really good at trying to clear away things for us. So that confluence of events really worked well for us. So we started our first cohort, probably appropriately April Fool's Day, 2015, with me doing all the teaching. I booked the rooms, ordered lunch, I everything. We were a staff of one, and we ran a cohort of 12 people, quite a few of whom are still very actively involved and helping run the program.
That's really interesting, and it's amazing. It ha so often it just the turn of events and the context and the environment in which you're trying to develop something just turns on, on a penny, and suddenly the conditions are right. And that's amazing to hear that story of, how if things have turned slightly differently, you may not have got the traction, right?
But you have to understand too that in QI, we are very entrepreneurial. We look for a problem, we look for an opportunity, we watch what's happening, and we go for that opportunity. So if it wasn't that opportunity, it would have been something different, but it would have been there. And I think, all the way through the province, people can look at the opportunities that have turned up. You would never have planned that, but there it was. You've got this opportunity now, and within PQI we have the ability to turn on a dime, which is interesting. There's a couple of things between the PQI culture and the health authority culture that helps us and hinders us. So we're very entrepreneurial. The health authority changing direction is like trying to steer a freighter, okay? Which is good because the health authority needs stability. But we have the ability to go in there and take advantage of an opportunity to improve that service for them, where they have this massive operations behind them that they need to worry about. So there's a bunch of things in there. Also, the health authority is very hierarchical. That's no surprise to anyone, where we tend to have a much flatter structure. So again, it makes it easier for us to move and to make decisions.
Yeah, that agility does have its advantages for sure. And I love hearing that story about how you basically bootstrapped the first cohort by yourself, which is actually astonishing. Yeah.
Well, I stole shamelessly, as we all do. I just did it at a very large scale.
So I wonder if we can turn our attention then from your prototype Fraser Health Authority program, because it was a prototype for the provincial rollout of the QI program that we now know as BC's Physician Quality Improvement Program. And that was rolled out in 2017. And so can I ask you, I mean, that's 7 years ago now. So how has PQI evolved during that time on a province-wide basis? And what has it achieved? What's it done well to date, do you think?
Let me think about it in terms of two things. One is the projects and the people that we've trained, and the other is the structure we've put in place. So as of about now, we've trained about 800 people in level three. That's a full year commitment and a lot of effort to learn quality improvement at a very high level. So it's essentially a project master's. And I think that's a very That's a very appropriate characterization of it. So these people, our initial goal was to create capacity, and I think we've done that very well. So 800 level three, 2000 approximately between levels one, two, and three. We've made a huge change in culture. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is every year Doctors of BC does a culture survey across all the doctors, and the results don't look all that great. Generally, the engagement is low. It's not the results we're looking for. We run some of those same questions in our PQI survey, and our results are significantly better. So we're really changing the culture within the healthcare system in BC, and it becomes contagious, because as people gain agency over their work, they start to work with their health authority colleagues in constructive ways. They stop looking at our medical leaders as going over the dark side, and instead start to understand the constraints they're working in, work with them, help them. Then I think it's, you know, it's very easy to see that we get a win-win there. The other side of it is in governance. So we work in very, very hierarchical organizations. You find 12 people who can say no before you get to the person that can say yes. It becomes very difficult to operate. And I think we very effectively demonstrate that that's not necessary. So with our steering committees in each health authority, our steering committees are comprised of four different groups. We've got the patients, and we should never, ever forget about that, about them. There's a saying about, nothing about us without us. And I think we've taken that to heart. We have the doctors of BC, and we're basically looking at process, making sure that things are running the way they should. And we provide some of that cross province informing, making sure people are working together, going in generally the same direction, but with a lot of latitude in that. We have the health authority, and we're in their space. We can't really do anything without them being involved with us. And then the physicians. And I don't mean to put the physicians last. It's more that there's more to this than us jumping in and, saying, because I'm the boss, right? As physicians, we write orders. We don't write suggestions. So in this case, we're far more collaborative. And I think generally, physicians are very collaborative. I know in the operating room, I can't think of a more collaborative environment than that. But we've got this structure now that is an extremely collaborative structure. We work by consensus. We have as many major stakeholders in the room as we can to get that diverse perspective to make good decisions. And I don't think we've maybe once or twice we've had to go back to the SSC when we couldn't agree on something and get some help, but very, very rarely. And over 10 years, we have, an exceptional record of being able to work in a very collaborative, non-hierarchical space and demonstrate to people that it can work and it does work.
Yeah, you've mentioned, a lot of moving parts in this complex system and a diversity of partners and stakeholders, patient partners, what matters to the physicians, what matters to the health authority, what matters to those patients and communities. And so just to follow up, on the flip side, what could the program be doing better? You've spoke about that a little bit, but where do you see that to hone in for improvement?
So in answering the question, I don't want to give the impression that we're doing anything wrong, but we're evolving. So when we started, it was necessary to create capacity. We needed to have people who knew how to do the work. And so that's what we've done. With 800 people having done level three now, we have capacity. So we're making the shift now to the next phase. And the next phase is to shift from creating capacity to creating impact. So with the training that we've given, people have come in with their own pet projects, the ones that affect them every day. Often these are not problems that are visible from the CEO's office. They're really important, but they're small local problems that they're the low hanging fruit in a lot of ways, but they're the ones that the physicians are passionate about, and it makes for a very good learning environment. We need to shift now to greater impact, a system-wide impact, and start to choose our projects to use the capacity that we've created rather than just creating more capacity with more localized, less globally impactful projects. We need to have a balance of both. We need that bottom up and the top down. Both are important, but we need to shift the balance now so that we get more of that wider system-wide impact.
I think there's a growing realization that that's, you know, the next step, I think, on the cards, absolutely, as you say. I wonder, it does require a bit of a shift. It takes a bit of a shift in mentality. It's going to require a much more collaborative approach. Any thoughts about that?
We've been working on that for the last 10 years. And I think the regional level of collaboration we have is outstanding. So initially, what happened is we had really good uptake on the ground amongst the doctors, local departments. You know, we had really good buy-in there. The C-suite, as I said, was... they were okay. They tolerated us. They were, you know, perhaps enthusiastic at times, and then they got back to work without really knowing how to engage with us. And then we had what I thought of as the middle management black hole, where they are, and I don't mean that in any bad way. It's just they're so focused on keeping things running. They're under-resourced. They're given too much to do with too little. So that middle management area was really tough to crack, because they're so focused on just keeping the system up. So, you know, over the last couple of years, we've made some really great advances with that group, and I now feel that our relationship with them you know, granted, every health authority is different, but our relationship with them and with operations has really started to solidify to the point where we are working so well with them that there's rarely any discussion that isn't forward moving, that isn't very positive. Where we have trouble right now is between that and the executive suite, which I think wants to use us, wants that engagement, wants this to move forward. They just don't really know how to do it. And so what I'm trying to promote with that one is that you know, every year we have the minister gives the health authority, well, every year the premier gives the minister the mandate letters, and then the minister shuffles a couple of words around and gives them to the health authorities. And then the health authorities look at these mandate letters, which no one's going to take exception to, right? Big things, it's important things that do need to change in the healthcare system. And from a political point of view, these are the things that they see as being really important. No problem with that. Where we run into an opportunity, I think, is our ability to help operationalize those. Taking the healthcare priorities, whether it's cancer care or surgery or things like that, these very broad things that end up in the mandate letters, and making them real on the ground, that's where we can come and really make a difference. We can make it practical. We can make it meaningful as far as impact, because that's the world we live in. and working together with the health authorities, I think we can take what they're trying to do, what we're trying to do, and actually get it done.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. That's that really would be amazing if we can, when we can do that, right? And I think that really does open the door to system-wide impact, as you say, which I think is the ultimate aim for our provincial health system. And that would be an amazing outcome if we can harness all those resources together in that way.
Well, 800 physicians, you know, just chomping at the bit to get in there and start making things better. Let's make it happen.
I love it. And that totally segues to this next question around making it happen and what that looked like. You know, you've clearly never been bored during your medical career, what with your heavy clinical schedule and various leadership roles, in addition to all your QI trailblazing that's continuing even as we speak. But looking back, what's kept you going? So it's like, what's been your source of underlying motivation throughout all this?
I think probably two things. One is I think I've got a really good ability to recognize opportunity. So that's one. And the other is I have a very bad ability to recognize barriers. So, you know, that combination I think is what leads us here. So when we started PQI, we were told you can't get physicians to engage. It can't happen. And you go to the earlier IHI conferences that I went to, everyone was having trouble getting physicians to engage. And so I just sat down and said, okay, well, what's stopping us? You know, people I know that, you know, they're fed up with the system. They want it to change. Why won't they engage? And so we came up with some basic ideas around that, put them into play, and you see the result of that. So the barriers aren't barriers at all. They're just, you know, there's speed bumps to deal with, and away you go. And you move a few of these bottlenecks out of the way, and you've got this tremendous force behind you that pushes you forward. So it's all about community. It's all about relationships. It's all about seeing clearly what's going on. And it's kind of like guiding the stream, right? Little excavation here, a little bit of banking there, and the stream goes where you want.
I like that picture of being able to guide and to change the course, just in small ways, right? But with ultimately a large impact. And I think that's a wonderful picture.
And with that pressure behind you of the community that we've created.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. Well, we're approaching the end of the interview now, Kurt, and it has been really enlightening, but I do have one more question for you. And I suspect I know the answer to this, but you've retired from clinical work now, but you're still keeping your plate full. Most people would think you've probably earned yourself a bit of a rest after all this pioneering and highly impactful work on a provincial scale. But I suspect that's the last thing on your mind. So now you're retired clinically. How are you keeping yourself busy? What are you up to?
Well, I tell people that I'm retired, but I'm not very good at it. Yeah, I'm doing quite a few things. So PQI, I haven't slowed down there at all. It's given me more time to dedicate to that where it's useful. And so there's that. Some of my extracurricular activities, I'm coaching chair for BC Archery. I'm on the Archery Canada coaching committee. President of BC Target Sports, which is the Olympic shooting organization for BC, comprising rifle, pistol, shotgun. I was the head coach for the BC North Indigenous Games, BC shooting group. So a lot there. I'm one of seven Métis knowledge keepers for For our more traditional on the land skills, I'm a trapper. I'm teaching kids how to keep up that tradition. What else am I doing? Oh, I teach a variety of things. Like I said, I'm retired, but I'm not very good at it.
I think that's amazing. I mean, you really are a true polymath with so many disciplines under your belt. And I sense a theme running all the way through that, including all those extracurricular activities and all this PQR back, is that you have a real passion for education and improving individuals' ability to better themselves, whatever their field is, to make an impact in their lives and the broader context of society. So I think that's a real testament to your character and your underlying motivation. So thank you. Thank you very much, Kurt. It's been a wonderful interview, and I've learned so much, and it's wonderful hearing the stories about the history of PQI and where it's going and how much it's achieved. So thank you again. But unfortunately, I can hear the closing music, which means we have to end things here. But thank you again, Kurt, for joining us. It's been a wonderful opportunity to speak with you. And as always, as a token of our gratitude on this podcast, one of our exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mugs will be on its way to you. And thank you too for our listeners for joining us today. Until next time, I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
And you've been listening to QualityCast North. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycomms@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.